Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I'm Lewis Duncan and joining me, as ever, is Motorsport.com's global MotoGP editor, Oriol Puigdemont. And the quest for KTM's replacement for Johann Zarco looks like it may be nearing its end, as a surprise name from the Moto2 paddock has cropped up on the rumour radar in the form of Spaniard Iker Lecuona. This is quite an interesting development, Yuri, because we've been wondering for a while now who's going to replace Zarco. Is it going to be Kallio? Is it going to be Oliveira? I don't think anyone considered Lecuona.
No. If it's definitely Lecuona, if it's definitely him, I think will be a big surprise and a bit shocky move from KTM side. So I'm still waiting for this confirmation, which, if it happens, will be very, very surprisingly, at least to me.
This rumour appeared last week from Speedweek, so Speedweek has a good connection with KTM, so we can take it as a fairly... This isn't just a random sort of rumour. There must be, as they say, there's no smoke without fire. But just, Lecuona, obviously, he's been in Moto2 a few years now. Results have been decent. Couple of podium finishes. This year, though, you know, in the early part of the season, he seemed to be the sort of top KTM rider. You know, Binder and Jorge Martin struggled a little bit on the chassis. Lecuona seemed to have good results on it. He comes with a bit of credence with KTM, if you see what I mean. Lecuona, you know, this isn't a sort of random, oh, we need a rider. There is some thought behind this, if it's true.
Yeah, but even with that, I thought that the most logical move would be to give Brad Binder the KTM seat, the official, I mean, the factory bike seat, and then maybe put Lecuona into the Tech 3 team. That information was suggesting that Lecuona was going to be Paul Espargaró's teammate, which is a bit, yeah, again, a bit surprisingly to me. To be honest, I was on the airport coming Australia from Japan. I was talking with a few managers. They were not aware about that rumor, and they were shocked when when I told them that there was this possibility. And as you said, coming from Speedweek, which has a really, really, really close relationship with KTM and Red Bull, which I think that we have, yeah, a lot of chances that this will be confirmed quite soon.
It's definitely, as you say, surprising the fact that he's being put straight into the factory team and not Tech 3, because the obvious two options were either Kallio or Oliveira. We know Kallio, it's not been an easy return to MotoGP, and I think KTM are perhaps now seeing that Kallio isn't really a great race option forward next year.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Oliveira was the most logical move. I mean, promoting Oliveira from KTM, from the Tech 3 team to the factory team, and put Binder and Lecuona, if you want, in the B team, in the Tech 3. But maybe putting two rookies in a satellite team, it was not the best option. And then I think Poncharal would be very, very upset about this move. I spoke with him in Japan and I asked him, listen, what do you think is going to happen? And he says, I think we're gonna have some news soon. But I didn't see that coming, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing with Oliveira and Tech 3 is that Hervé Poncharal has always been quite adamant that KTM promised Oliveira to him. And, I mean, first of all, you have to give props to KTM for seemingly backing that loyalty. But at the same time, you do have to question, why not put Oliveira on the factory bike? It's the same bike he's been riding this year. You know, it's a factory bike he's riding. He's been really good on it. And from KTM, a marketing point of view, you know, Oliveira coming from Moto3 KTM to Moto2 KTM to Tech3 KTM to the factory KTM, that's surely what they want. It shows that their development steps,
Yeah, I think there has to be. If this this information is right and we have the confirmation, I think there has to be a reason, because behind the scenes that we cannot find out at the moment, at least me. but there has to be a reason, otherwise, I mean, and I don't want to think that it's a matter of budget. Or, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that Lekuona cannot perform well. I'm just saying that maybe KTM is looking for the next Quartararo, which it would be understandable, but at the same time, I wouldn't point to Lekuona.
People were surprised when Quartararo was picked by the Petronas Sepang racing team, but we have to remember that Quartararo was exceptional in the Spanish Championship and the CEV Moto3 series, and he came in, you know, that talent was still very much there. Lekuona's not really had that sort of...
And don't forget that the M1 is not the same than the KTM.
Exactly, it's very easy bike,
which makes your life much easier than any other bike, especially the KTM. I mean, KTM, only you can ride this bike if you are almost crashing every corner. With the M1, it's completely opposite. I mean, it's a very easy bike to ride, and from the all examples we have from the past, it is pretty clear the difference between both bikes.
You're talking about Quartararo, it also kind of the example that sticks out in my mind was Honda taking Jack Miller straight from Moto3, and it almost seemed to me back then that Honda was trying to do sort of what KTM's doing now and what Yamaha have done with Quartararo. They're trying to find that next big thing, and it didn't really work for Jack Miller on the Honda, because he wasn't even on the satellite Honda, he was on the open class bike. Lekuona's gonna, if he does come to KTM, he does know the chassis at least, but as you say, this is a very, very difficult MotoGP bike to ride. You know, as Zarco proved this year, as Callio's proven right now in a race situation, despite the fact he's got so much experience on the bike. It does seem like if that's what KTM's aiming for,
I think they've taken
a big gamble.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really risky move, to be honest. I'm not sure what they are looking for on this move. But yeah, it will be interesting. Definitely will be interesting to see this guy. If it's true, will be very, very interesting to see another, like, I would say, I don't want to say average, but top guy from Moto2 jumping straight to MotoGP bike and see how he performs.
Can't help but feel that this situation, we wouldn't even be in this situation right now had Dani Pedrosa decided, actually, I want to go race, or if KTM were able to sort of change his mind. You have to feel, I'm not saying Dani Pedrosa is a problem, but you have to feel that his desire to just remain a test rider has really complicated the KTM situation somewhat.
I think Danny is just enjoying the life. He couldn't do it in the last 13-14 years in MotoGP, so he's just enjoying the life, living the dream of being a rider without any pressure, with no people around him, enjoying riding a race bike. So yeah, I think he's very, very, very happy, and that's why he's not interested at all on race again. Don't forget that he has won many races in MotoGP, so what's the point on coming back, just taking risking to get injured again? So yeah, I don't think KTM has enough arguments or enough to convince him.
Yeah, it would have to be a very big amount of money they would have to offer Pedrosa if he was to consider racing, and I don't think KTM have that amount of money that Pedrosa would be willing to accept. Okay, when we come back, we'll take a look ahead to this weekend's Australian Grand Prix at Phillip Island, and of course there's a big name returning to the circuit with LCR Honda. Welcome back. We will be talking about the Australian Grand Prix now, coming to, for me, the best short circuit anyway, the best short circuit in the world at Phillip Island. You know, one of the most majestic, beautiful places to go motorcycle racing. But all the eyes this weekend, of course, will be on a certain Mr. Johan Zarco as he steps in to replace Takaki Nakagami on the LCR Honda. You broke this story on Autosport and Motorsport.com a couple of weeks ago that Nakagami was going to go for surgery and Zarco would be stepping in. At the time, it was kind of thought that this is a way of HRC evaluating Zarco. But interestingly, during the Japanese Grand Prix weekend, Lucio Cecchinello, the LCR boss, said that actually this was my idea. So that's quite an interesting thing. It seems to be that Honda thought about this for a little while, and they must have seen that actually there's a good opportunity here for us to see what Zarco can do.
Yes, but don't forget that team managers, what people many times say at the paddock, is not the truth, what they have to say. I'm not saying that Cecchinello is lying, but I would put it in that way. I don't see Cecchinello doing anything without Honda's green light from the very first moment. So I don't think Cecchinello has the power to decide and to move, to make any move before saying Honda what he's trying to do. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that this move is only a Honda's decision, but I'm saying that I'm 100% sure that it was not only his decision. Honda was aware all the time, step by step, day by day, about what LCR was trying to do.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this a little bit last week, but we have to talk about it again, because Lorenzo once again was 40-odd seconds off of his teammate in Japan and outside of the points. This can't go on, and, you know, it's going to be interesting, certainly this weekend, to see how Lorenzo reacts to Zarco. They've talked about it in Japan. He said, there's no pressure on me, you know, whatever. Honda have said, they've repeated the party line of, yeah, you know, Zarco's not going to come and replace Lorenzo, but you have to think that he is going to come in and put pressure on Lorenzo, and that's ultimately the aim of Honda.
Honda can say whatever they want to say, but in the end, if we apply the common sense, I'm just applying the common sense, okay? So would you imagine Honda making that move knowing that Zarco will ride for another bike next year? I don't think so. At least Honda keeps the chance to put him in a next year's bike. I don't know if it's going to happen, but at least they have this chance, this possibility on their pocket. So let's see what happens. So I think Honda doesn't make this move knowing that four riders next year will be Mark, Jorge, Carl, and Taka. I don't think so. I think that they just, maybe it's only a backup, you know, just in case something happens. That's my perspective. That's my view of the situation.
We know Zarco's going to come into this bike. We know it's an easier bike to ride than this year's. So in a sense, Zarco going well might distort reality in that, you know, yeah, he can be quick on the 2018 bike, but Lorenzo was quite quick on the 2018 bike in the test, and we know it was a better bike. So maybe they can evaluate Zarco, but it might not give a true picture of what he can actually do on the Honda.
Okay, but I understand what you mean, but I would agree with that if Lorenzo would be 7-8 tenths of the pace. not 2 seconds of the pace. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, no way. I mean, I would. Yeah. I would think so. I would think that if, yeah, if Lorenzo would be like, yeah, a bit slower, or, you know, half a second, 7/10 a second, if you want. Okay, but not more than 2 seconds of the pace. So it means that something is not right there. Something is wrong. So that's why I think that we can give full credit to what Zarco does or will do next weekend.
Take Mark out of the equation, because Mark's Mark. You can't compare a Honda rider with Mark. But if you look at what Crutchlow's doing, he's not a second off the pace of Mark. Most of the times he's within sort of, you know, 7/10, half a second sometimes. Yes, he has more experience with the Honda, but he's also quite injured, and, you know, this bike is really, really difficult. So I see what you mean there with, you know, there is something wrong there with Lorenzo's. We know it can't be talent, because Lorenzo is a talented rider. We can't really blame the injury, so the only logical explanation is it's mental. He's not...
It's 100%. The bike, 100%. The bike's broken. I mean, he admits that he doesn't want to take any risk with that bike, because he has had hard crashes, and he doesn't want to take any risk, knowing that maybe with next year's bike, if he's still there, will be much more easy with a new prototype, training. I mean, taking part on all the pre-season testing program, and so I think will be much more easy for him. But again, if he stays, which I'm still not 100% sure, this will happen. This is gonna happen, because I see, but it's just my feeling. I'm not saying that he's quitting, but I'm just saying that I'm not 100% sure that he will be there next year, because I have some inputs related to the feeling most of the time, not any information. But for example, I see Honda very relaxed, and I see Lorenzo very relaxed considering this situation. I mean, that's something that we don't know at the moment.
Another interesting strand to all this is with Zarco accepting the LCR offer. It seems that he's forfeited the Yamaha testing role. He spoke about this at the weekend, and Rossi spoke about it in a French interview with L'Equipe, I think, at the weekend. He said, "I knew exactly what I was doing. I knew the risks." But it seems to me that if he didn't think there was a way back, if there was a really strong way back onto the grid next year with Honda, he wouldn't have risked the Yamaha test role, because, you know, that seemed like a really good option at the time. So there seems to be that there is more to this than meets the eye.
Yeah, but I think, to me, having Zarco, a rider like him, in a test rider role would be a nonsense move. If you look at the big picture, Honda overtaking Yamaha. Yamaha in Buriram, they were very happy with this possibility, saying that even Valentino Rossi's current truck engineer, Silvano Galbusera, was very happy to make a step back and to, you know, to be the technical the crew chief of Johann Zarco in this test team structure. And then 10 days later, boom, Zarco signs with Honda and says and underlines that the door with Yamaha is closed. So I wouldn't be really, really, really happy with the Yamaha top management at the moment if I would be the Japanese executives from Yamaha. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah, that was something, a thought that popped into my mind, is that Yamaha, it's clear that they're not quite working well with Folger, so why close the door on Zarco when there's no guarantee on the outside anyway? There doesn't look like there's a guarantee he'll get onto the grid next year. Why close that door? That's a strange quite a strange move. Zarco could also come with a bit of knowledge, albeit three races, but three races knowledge of a Honda.
What's the point? You have to say. I mean, at the moment, if Honda has overtaken you on that move, you have to close that door and say, listen, okay, take it, but you cannot keep your hopes and then say, and then making even more evidence than if next year Zarco is with Honda, making even more clear than Honda has, you know, has take one of your main priority for 2020 season.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this then, looking into next year, do you think this has hindered the Yamaha's European test team operation? Because it hasn't really kicked off this year as well as it probably should have. And the fact that the rider that they really wanted has gotten away from them, it seems that this will be a big hindrance.
Yeah, but Yamaha's testing philosophy is completely different than Honda testing philosophy and than others like KTM testing philosophy. So while Stefan Bradl is doing a really, really, really top job, and it, I mean, even Mark says that and most of the riders say that, Honda riders say that, and even the top management says that, Yamaha are focused on Valentino and Maverick, on the official team, and until they test the new parts and they say yes, no, yes, no, it's nothing really important at the moment to this Yamaha test team. That's why maybe it was another point for Zarco to close that door.
On that note, I think we'll end it there. Thank you ever so much for listening, and thank you, Yuri, for your company once again. If you like what you heard, you can find the Tank Slappers podcast on Apple Podcasts via iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And be sure to keep abreast of all the MotoGP action this weekend from Phillip Island on autosport.com and motorsport.com. And make sure you're following Autosport on Twitter. The handle is at Autosport. We shall return soon, but for now, it's a very warm goodbye.